Welcome everybody back in to another episode, the next episode of See Ball, Get Ball. I'm David Pollack. Brent Rollins joins me as always. And we teased it a little bit on Monday. We talked about the Big Ten. And by the way, I'm okay saying this. It's been the premier conference in college football. And I know some people don't like that, but the last couple years, the national champion has come from the Big Ten. And playing really, really good football. You look at the draft, a lot of guys getting drafted. There's a lot of talent, a lot of big schools. Expansion has made the league better too. I mean, I would argue that too. Like, expansion has made this league deeper, more talented. I think it's a debate between the SEC and the Big Ten that we can get into another day, but Brett Bielema will have his own take and he'll join us in a little bit, and he's fantastic. I've known Brett for a long time. Brent, when you ask him a question, you'll get an answer. Like, he's not going to mince words. I absolutely love that about Brett. He's so honest and so straightforward.
Straight shooter. And straight by the shooter. Way, when you said next episode, did you immediately go back to like early 90s?
That's why I said it. The next episode. Every old man on the broadcast or podcast knows exactly what that means.
Yes, very much went there. But what's interesting, the point you made about the Big Ten, and that's thinking about actually trying to predict what's going to happen this season. The additions of Oregon, USC, and Washington, plus the kind of elevation, a little bit of Indiana and then Illinois with Coach Bielema. That's the depth, like where it was for that so long, it was just Ohio State and Michigan. And Penn State was there, but they couldn't beat either of those teams. And it was kind of like, but it was mainly those two guys. And now it's, you look through it and you're like, I can see this team getting beat. I can see that team getting beat. Like, it's not like it's just that. So that leads me actually to the first question about the conference itself. Oregon last year coming in, going undefeated in the conference.
Slapping people around. My league. This is my league. Welcome to it.
Does anybody break that top three? Or is that top three that we saw a season ago still reign supreme, I think?
So Oregon, Ohio State, and Penn State?
Yep. Which, by the way, Ohio State was fourth in the league. Indiana was ahead of them. But
I'm about to say, I mean, because I think if you're doing the rankings and how they finished. I was debating when I was looking at this how many teams would make it. And those three names at the top of the list – I felt very confident in. Like, I didn't need to stretch. Oregon's losing a lot, but man, the recruiting has been great. Ohio State losing a lot. The recruiting has been great. Penn State not losing much at all. So the experience is there and the upgrade to the coaching staff. Even with some change at Ohio State and all that stuff, dude, we kind of know it's plug and play. And so, yeah, those three to me felt very concrete. But I'll say this. The fourth team feels very solid to me too. And Indiana's good. Like, I think Indiana's, like, I know Michigan is going to get back to more semblance of Michigan. USC is going to have a good year. I think Iowa's going to be solid. Like, if that offense does turn around, like, I think it has a chance to become better. But like, Indiana to me feels like the next team, and it, like, I could debate you, but there's a lot of things about that Indiana team that is really, really good. And I feel like the staying power, I don't feel like they're going anywhere.
That's, and especially when you look at their schedule, the first three games, Old Dominion, Kennesaw State, Indiana State. So they're starting 3-0 before they get Illinois at home. I mean, that's just happening. Now, at Iowa, at Oregon, at Penn State this year, as a road schedule versus what they had a season ago, where at Ohio State was really, to me, the only road test that they had. That's one where I think they do take a step back, but yep. are they still in that fourth spot and potentially a playoff team? That's a phenomenal question.
I think it's a good debate. And the problem is you got to predict everything else and predict everything else perfectly, which is impossible. But the fact that we're in this conversation with Indiana, they should feel happy. Like, the fact that they're a team that we're literally looking at before the season, we're going, okay, I'm pretty sure they're in this playoff conversation. I don't know where they stand. Are they fourth? But here's another thing when you start looking at schedules, and I'm going to say this forever because it's just part of it. When you start looking at the games that are very close and you don't know how to pick them, and it says at, and it says at, and it says at, you can go ahead and mark two of those three are going to be losses. Like, it's just hard. It's hard to go on the road. It's the hardest thing to do in college football. And those aren't like bad atmospheres. They're going to really good atmospheres. Like, those are atmospheres with loud fans that love their teams that are also good football teams. So now you add in all that together. That's why I think Indiana's right there on that edge. And I think we'll talk about whether we put them into the playoff or not here in a second, but the staying power of Indiana is pretty dang cool with Cignetti. If you're a fan of Indiana, you should be jacked about year two.
Yep. We'll do coach of the year. So speaking of Cignetti, we'll do coach of the year first, coach of the year transfer, sort of newcomer of the year, and then we'll get to the game or the actual championship game and playoff predictions. So transfer of the year, I'll give you three options.
Okay.
Gronowski at Iowa, QB, former San Diego State guy. Preston Stone at Northwestern, maybe making that position and team relevant for that school that hasn't been in a long time. Or the Pena sort of Ross combo receiver for Penn State. If you had to pick between those three, I'm sure there's others that, you know, we talked about that are going to have a big impact, but I thought who could actually change kind of the fortune of their team. I think those three sort of are the best picks.
I think that we know what we're getting with Iowa always. So if Gronowski can come in and be like, kind of like we talked about in the show the other day, like Maryland doesn't need, or Wisconsin, they don't need like elite quarterback play. They just at some point need decent quarterback play. And I think if Iowa can get consistency at that spot, and if that's the guy that brings it, we know they'll be physical. We know Frentz is going to have great special teams. Like, the longest tenured coach in college football. We know all of the other factors that they're going to come to fruition. They're going to make you earn it. They're going to be physical. They're going to be tough. They're not going to commit penalties. Like, you get that guy at the quarterback spot and that gets ironed out, you go from a good season to a great season. Like, that's how Iowa does it. So that's the direction I would go. Is that what you would go to?
Yeah, I actually agree. All right. Coach of the year.
Okay. So, can you name the last five coaches of the year in the Big Ten?
No.
Last year, you know, Cignetti. The year before, David Braun from Northwestern. Harbaugh was the year before. And then Mel Tucker was the year before that. So that was kind of interesting to look at, like the last winners of the award.
And that award is so much often a best season award versus – like, you know, hey, if Ohio State goes 12-0, yeah, you're supposed to go 12-0. You're Ohio State, like that kind of thing. So, yeah, it's hard to win that when you're at the top.
Hey, 2020 was Tom Allen in Indiana. So Indiana's had two coaches for coach of the year in the time any other schools had one and in the last 5 years. And Ohio State has had none of those. So that kind of gives you an idea. It's interesting. It's James Franklin to me. Like, this is – I don't think there's any way that Brent Rollins is ever going to jump on the We Are bandwagon. I just don't think you have it in you. I'll be interested to see with the picks and the predictions to see if you come to the dark side.
Might shock you a little bit.
To the We Are side, because that's their saying, by the way. We Are Penn State. I mean, the atmosphere, obviously, the experience. Like, I think they're in for a special season, so I'm kind of giving away more of the other stuff too. But James Franklin getting – the offensive side of the ball situated, the defensive side of the ball situated, I think they're in line for a great season. And I think the 2025 coach of the year in the Big Ten is James Franklin.
Is it? I wonder if these things end up like regular season only, because that kind of impacts how I'm look at this. Because I was actually going to say Ryan Day.
Okay.
Because I think just to kind of preempt some of that, I could see them losing the opening game and not losing again potentially until the Big Ten championship game.
He won it in 2019. He tied with an individual in 2019. No way in heck you could ever guess who it was. If you did, I'd be very impressed. 2019 Big Ten. By the way, this is the fact that Brent can calculate some of this stuff. I'm telling you, he's a doctor. He's brilliant. Like, he can go through these seasons and probably be like, 19, who won the championship? Blah, blah, blah. Okay, I'll give you a hint.
I got no clue for these awards, that's for sure.
I'll give you a hint. He's got the same hairstyle as you.
Well, I mean, Franklin has the same hairstyle as me.
Okay. That's not him. He's Mel got
Tucker
a famous.
Mel Tucker did too.
He's got a famous saying that everyone knows in the country about his squad. He's in the Big Ten.
Oh my gosh. I'm completely being an idiot.
Bro,
right here.
Fleck.
PJ Fleck. Yeah, that's right.
Flecky.
Okay.
Flecky. Yeah. Flecky tied with Ryan Day in 19.
All right. So who's in the championship game? Who you think's in the Big Ten championship game?
Well, obviously I got James Franklin and Penn State in the championship game. That is a given. That is a must. Now, I debated between Oregon and Ohio State. And remember,
they don't play each other.
Huh?
They don't play each other this year.
They don't play each other. And Ohio State, the Texas game doesn't count. It won't count for the Big Ten, which is a bigger deal. I think both of them have insane question marks. But the best players to me, Jeremiah Smith and Caleb Downs, like I'm going to lean on those guys and lean on the talent. And it's at home. Like when they play a lot of their games this year, Ohio State, like I'm going to bet on them. They're playing a lot in Columbus, which is good.
Yep.
So I'll go Ohio State.
So those are the two that are in it. By the way, mine are the exact same. I have Penn State and Ohio State. And here's what I have. I think Penn State loses at Ohio State in the regular season. All that talk is there. All the monkeys are there on the back. And then in the championship game, and James Franklin beat Ohio State to win the Big Ten championship.
Did you just go me and go back to 2000 and what was
little
it?
Georgia Bama, 2021. Yeah,
Georgia 2021. It was before the season. Said Georgia would lose to Alabama in the SEC championship game, beat him in the Natty, and they did. It was fantastic. I like it. I think I'm taking Penn State, and I do think that this year will be. Listen, they'll have some growing pains. They'll have some big. I mean, they got some big shoes to fill in that roster. It ain't just nobody. But I do think by the end of the season, I think they're going to be really, really good. And remember, you know, when your DC comes over from Ohio State, like that is a good. You've got good background on him. Like you've got a good understanding of Ryan Day, his principles, his philosophy. So Coach Knowles. Going to be a big deal for them. I think that will help them in the long term. And I think Penn State, I think they get over the hurdle, baby.
Yep. I agree. At least for that. Now who's in the playoffs. So I'm assuming we're going to go ahead and put two teams, Penn State and Ohio State in the playoffs. Anybody, any other representation in the college football playoff that is 12 teams.
Yeah.
Straight seated, from the Big Ten.
Oregon's getting in. I think Oregon's getting in. I think they've proven it. They're pretty consistent. We know who they are. We know what they are. Upper echelon talent is really, really good. I like their lines of scrimmage. They'll be really good. Like Oregon's going to win a bunch of games, and I think they're going to be in the mix too. They're in. So I got three going in. I didn't put Indiana in. I didn't put them in this year. I think that they have a chance, but I think they're going to lose at least two games this season. The ats worry me with them for sure. I think they're going to be good. I think they're going to be really good, and they're going to beat people, and they're going to cause, you know, chaos in their league. But I got Indiana like just on the outside looking in.
I was debating between four teams because I think it's going to be one of these four teams, and I do think they end up getting four in. Indiana's one. I said all along, I think one of the I's are getting into the playoff. Indiana, Iowa, Illinois. I think Michigan, like if they get competent quarterback play, they're going to be there. But they also have some out-of-conference game in Oklahoma. I'm going out on a limb here, very much so. I think Iowa gets an early win. I'm crazy. I know I'm crazy for saying this.
You absolutely
win
are.
At Iowa State, they've got Penn State and Oregon at home. I think they get maybe one of those.
Okay.
And, you know, Indiana at home. I'm crazy for all that. I don't know. I should probably say Illinois. By the way, I should probably say Illinois because Coach Bielema is joining us and getting ready to join us. I should just say that. And it nice flow. to get in the playoff. And I actually, their schedule, I like their schedule. They got at Duke, at Indiana, but they get SC at home. They get Ohio State at home. I will say this. Your argument or your talk about them not being the fourth or them not getting a fourth team, that's where does the additions of the other schools, SC, Washington, Oregon,
yep,
and then the moving up in the world of Indiana, Illinois, Iowa, all these teams playing much better, Michigan, the depth, do you get to where you have a situation last year like the SEC had where you have three teams that are 9-3? And you've got, say, all Indiana, Iowa, and Illinois, all of them are 9-3. Like, and they're just out on the edge of it. That's probably what happens, actually, more so than one of them getting in.
I think that's
Michigan getting a big win at Oklahoma and then and somehow ended up 10-2, they're in. But
yes,
I just think all those teams maybe end up 9-3. And if I had to pick one, I'm going to change it. I'm going to say Illinois because Coach Beam was joining us and we need to be positive in that regard and thank him and put his team in the playoffs for that.
Hey,
but no, that's going to be, yeah.
If you're talking about Illinois, and obviously they've got an elite receiver to replace, but having your quarterback and having a lot of guys back on, I mean, they got Gabe on defense, who's an animal, 17. He's an absolute animal. They've got good players. They've got a good coach. I think they're very much going to be in the mix, so it's not crazy. But I do think there's a lot of really good teams, just like we talked about in the beginning. A lot of good teams, which is – it makes the league more fun, man. It makes every week yes. more fun. Like, it's just awesome when you have – the more parity you have within a league. Now, the Big 12, and here's what people say. Well, they don't have a great team. I don't give a rat's ace. The games are awesome every yep. week. Like, I'm not here for you have to have so many contenders for me to watch your games. I love watching good football games. I think you're going to have a ton of good football games in the Big Ten now. You got a ton in the SEC. You've always got parity in the Big 12. The ACC ain't there yet. Like, it's just not, but there's going to be four teams that are pretty good. You know, like, it's more fun week in, week out when you got these teams, man, that you can say, oh, they could beat them. Ooh, this could be a trap game. Ooh, this could be it. Like, that makes the game awesome.
Yep. I'd say three of those, Ohio State, Penn State, Oregon, I think you could put those in pen. The other, you're writing it in pencil and you're erasing it 10 times before Weekly. You actually before you actually put somebody in the playoffs. But, you know, all right, I'm going to say, because Coach Bielema is going to join us, I'm going to say Illinois. They make the playoffs this year.
All right, next we welcome in, obviously, everybody's seen this guy for a number of years, Brett Bielema, very successful coaching career. More importantly, Coach, now, like, how is it being a girl dad? I mean, you're right in the mix of being the girl dad. I've got one that's 15. I can promise you this, bro. It don't get better. Mm. But how is it coaching those girls at home?
You know, so we're going to be leaving in 2 days for Dance Nationals in Branson, Missouri. I'm sure that's going to be an eye opener. Got a couple of vacations this summer. I kind of, you know, try to take a couple weeks here, and every year it's just amazing to me. I know it's only been a year, but the growth that they have from one summer to the next summer. I was in the pool yesterday with my little one, and she's like dive bombing in the deep end, pulling up rings off the bottom. And last year she was barely swimming, so it's just crazy to watch.
What is that dance? What do you think that dance contest looks like? Because here's what I imagine, Coach. It's like every guy is like, okay, let's get and talk ball. They want to do that anyway. They're going to see you there. They're going to be like, Coach, this dance stuff, it ain't that entertaining, but talk some ball with me.
You know, Dave, I actually think there must be a dance dad code, because really I think they – you know, guys will come up and say things. Obviously, we've been very successful here as of late, so it's all been positive, but – I am kind of intrigued. This is going to be a national deal in Branson, Missouri. So kind of going down in that southern region, you're going to get a certain type of fan that may not be in my favor, right? So it'll be interesting. But I think there is a dance dad code that you just kind of concentrate on your girls and make it great. So I'm super excited about it. I can't say as I approve of all these new dance moves. My older one's getting a little older, and she does this little routine here and then push the wall thing. I'm like, no, you're shaking a little too much there, girl. So it's going to be a growing moment, I'm sure.
Well, Brent, I want to introduce you to Brent because Brent's my co-host, and Brent just – we just did our college football playoff teams, and Brent has your squad going in the college football playoff this year. So Brent, take it away.
So what are your expectations for this season, Coach?
You know, Brent, I found this one – you know, one of the cool things about my career, David and I met a long time ago you know, when I was a head coach of Wisconsin, I was a head coach of Arkansas, and, you know, I've had some success. But when I went to the NFL my first year in the league, I was with Coach Belichick, and we won a Super Bowl, right? And so going into my second year, I'll never forget, you know, Bill has a very specific way to talk to the media and how that goes into it. And somebody in media asked him about his expectations, and I thought he had an unbelievably awesome answer. He said, well, whatever my expectations are, I hope our players are even more. And I thought that kind of has – what I've resonated with me and what I've kind of said to our guys is, listen, everybody's going to have an opinion. Everybody's going to have a viewpoint. But the only people that really, you know, determine our success are really you guys, right? As coaches, there isn't any way I prepare more or less based on what I think can happen. I just do it the same way every day, try to be as consistent as I can. But I think those guys drive what really happens. So that's probably my answer. I hope the expectations I have are really significant, but I hope that our players are even higher.
Well, and when you got a QB coming back like Luke, I mean, just, you know, one thing watching him grow and develop, and I remember the injury a couple of years ago and kind of not in the equation, which has got to be frustrating. And then you come back and, you know, you're the guy, you know, last year. But again, the thing that stood out to me is in every game, like no matter who it was, when you needed a play, like Cool Hand Luke was there. And like he made the play in the moment.
You know, I think that's an excellent point, David. Like I was actually talking to Luke and Xavier Scott, our corner, and J.C. Davis, our left tackle. They're all going with me to media days here in at the end of July. And so some of the parents had talked about coming. So I reached out to Luke's mom and dad, and I kind of was talking through things. We're talking about some big picture things in the months ahead, but also in the year ahead when the NFL is going to have a chance to become real for their son. And I told them literally one of the greatest points I've tried to make about Luke when I'm talking to the outside world is, listen, Luke is really good on early downs, right? But he's the most effective player at the end of half, end of game of any quarterback I've ever had. Just his composure in that moment. He does a scouting report on Fridays where he basically reports to the other quarterbacks. And for me as a head coach and my offensive coordinator and quarterback coach kind of gives a self-report on what he sees end of half, end of game analysis could be. And, you know, he had four game-ending drives this year, right, in the most critical moment. Everybody can be good when the middle of the second quarter, but when it's in that end of half, end of game scenario and it's game on the line, like, he is as good as I've ever been around, and I don't think that happens by chance.
How do you get a kid like that who's naturally, like, more quiet? How do you get a kid like that to come out and talk? Because you start to see him in the media now, and he's got more – it's getting to be more personality. How did you drive that at him as a coach to make him be a leader?
You know, I defer to my – I have a strength coach who I think is second to none. Tank has been with me, Tank Wright. I had him at Arkansas as an assistant. He was in my system at Arkansas. Then he went to Michigan for a while and then brought him back home, and he's a Memphis guy. So he's got a little bit of that Southern blood in him as well. And he kind of said, hey, Coach, this was a year ago during the summer. He goes, I'm going to have on Wednesdays, which is our team run days, when we have the whole team work together – the only people that can talk on Wednesdays are our quarterbacks. And I'm like, I'm looking at him and I thought, oh, what a great idea, concept, thought. So, you know, literally on those workout Wednesdays, the only person that could talk in the entire roster was our quarterbacks. And it kind of drove it out, not just for Luke, but also our number two, our number three, our incoming freshmen. And that was kind of the genesis to where I took it in the fall and, you know, really put Luke in a position that he had to talk. And he's super smart, super intelligent. You know, his daddy, I know everybody's been saying his dad is a team doctor at Mississippi State. He raised an incredible kid. His mom is an incredibly influential person in him. He's kind of got that motherly instinct in him as well. It's just really cool to see his confidence. We always say in our building, volume reflects confidence. And the way when Luke does talk, he's very loud and very clear, and he speaks with confidence. And I think that's perpetrated now into everything we see.
That's perfect. And, Coach, just know that Davey is 100% stealing that and taking that to the high school realms.
100%.
That idea right 100%. There. He already wrote it down, and he's definitely stealing it. But speaking of him and then obviously who he's throwing to, you lost 171 targets and 14 touchdowns to the league. You get transfers in Hudson Clement and Bowick from Ball State. How do you feel about the receiver room? How do you feel that that's looking, confidence, that that sort of spot? Because Pat Bryant and Franklin were big time for you guys last year.
They were absolutely awesome to work with, and you know, both were kind of two different stories. Pat Bryant had been a 4-year development player that we brought in. He actually signed on Wednesday before I took the job on Friday. So he took a leap of faith to come here before I was even announced. And his growth over the last 4 years is why you get into college football. Like, he, you know, he played as a true freshman. I actually kind of debated whether or not to redshirt or play him, but I just thought he'd be a better player in year two. And, you know, that was a great idea in year two and three, but in year four, I sure wish I had him back for another year.
He's going to do all right on Sundays.
He's going to do all right. We went out to OTAs in Denver, and what the plan is there, Sean Payton loved him. There was one guy that drove that draft pick, and it was Sean Payton. He saw something in him, and really excited to see that. But on the flip side, Zakari was literally a 1-year transfer that we got in July. Like, he didn't even start working out with our guys till July and August, but he had had a little bit of a history with our OC. So I think the receiver room next year will be a little bit of a blend of what we just saw last year. I have two returning guys, actually three guys, Hank Beatty, who's incredibly blessed, a very talented slot receiver who really came into his own the last half of the year. One of the best punt returners in the country, had a big couple plays in the bowl game. Yeah. We also have Malik Elzey, Alex Kapka-Jones, a couple guys that played a lot of football for us a year ago and kind of a backup role. Those guys are really impressive guys coming in. And then, like you said, Hudson and Jaybo, two transfer guys, but also have a young freshman, Braden Trimble, from right down the road here, about an hour and 15 minutes away, that has been very impressive. So, you know, at Illinois, you guys know my career. We really haven't signed a five-star come in and impact immediately. We've had the guys that have come in and kind of a little bit under the radar and just kind of do things. We think under-recruited, undersized, and underdeveloped are three great words because they can literally change overnight. And I think that'll be the – and then we actually have a wide receiver room that's complemented by a tight end room. We probably have four or five tight ends as good as I've ever had here at Illinois. It kind of goes back to my time at Arkansas. We had three tight ends, Jeremy Sprinkle, A.J. Derby, and Hunter Henry, that all played and drafted in the NFL for 6-plus years. So we're kind of getting to that level now again.
Yeah, and we're starting to see, because of defenses that have gotten so small and speed, that obviously 12 personnel, I imagine everybody in the country, if you got those guys, you'll continue to use them. But that's all fine and dandy. But let's talk about the real side of the football that really matters. Gabe Ikus, every time I watch the dude, I love the motor. I think about, you know, the Michigan game, chasing guys down and hammering the football out, like just making plays. And when I watch 17, coach, like, I don't know how big he is, but that sucker hits people and they get ejected. Like, they just bounce off of him, but he looks lean. So I imagine he's a pretty big dude. So two part. One, I hear there's a pretty good recruiting story about finding that young man that I want to hear about. And then two, just the player he is and what he's going to be, because he's a menace.
Yeah, you know, great example of recruiting 101. He wasn't on our radar at all. I have a very good friend. It sounds like a joke. His name is Jack Daniels. He lives down in West Palm. He's a head coach at Cardinal Newman High School down in West Palm. Before that, he was at William T. Dwyer. Had some guys that played for me there. I've been, you know, known him since I've been a young guy. And he's actually at a game watching the prep for the team he's going to play. And he was playing a team that was going against Gabe, and he called. He goes, "Hey, I don't know who this Gabe Ikus kid is." He goes, "But you ought to look him up." So we tried to find his team. Didn't have huddle, like crazy as that is in today's world. So we had to look for the opponents they were playing. I watched a couple clips of games, and I literally sent Aaron Henry, who was my DB coach then. Now he's now my coordinator. We were going into a bye week on Monday. He called me. He said, "Coach, this kid is beautiful." So we started going after him. It really got down to us. A little bit of Tennessee in the end, and now we've had to fend off some guys that have been trying to get him away out of our roster without him being in the portal, but that's a whole nother conversation. But yeah, he's now 270 pounds, looks incredible, runs really well. I tell this story. So he's playing as a true freshman. We're playing at Minnesota, kind of an end of game scenario. The quarterback takes off on a scramble, and Gabe tries to take a swipe at the ball from behind. He kind of missed it. The quarterback put his head down to kind of protect. And so with his bare hand, he hit the kid in the head and knocked him out. He's concussed for like a week. He's got those country hand strength thing. Like,
I gotta say, that's grown right there.
Yeah, like grown man strength, right? Like, he kind of reminds me, I'm not saying it, but you know, I had a player at Wisco, Gabe, reminds me a lot of times, J.J. Watt. Now, J.J. was a stand-down defensive end. He's gave plays on his feet, but he literally, when he was in a three-point stance last year, kind of at that true D.N. four technique, five technique, he was the most productive player in college football and the reps that he had there. So really excited about what he is. I know the next level thinks he's going to be really special. So, yeah, really, really good upside there.
So my question was going to be, who does he remind you of? And you kind of went to a name that is a pretty big name that you throw out there.
Well, you know, that was college, but I tell you, if I had to do a, you know, you guys know in the NFL, they do a lot of comparing things. So he kind of, you know, I never got to coach him, but I saw him in the league for a long time, Matt Judon, just a really strong, big outside backer, good on his feet. Probably want to rush him about 90% of the time and drop him less than 10, but, you know, very talented. The other thing Gabe is a hungry dude that literally, I'll walk in the building at Sunday night at 8 o'clock and he'll be in the indoor pulling a weighted sled. We had to literally get him to understand that he can overtrain because he can get to a point where it's almost too much and puts a tax on his body. But yeah, but again, he's driven out of what he learned at home. His mom is this beautiful woman. She calls him Gabriel all the time. And like, just like, she is the reason he's here. She's the reason he stayed here. Like all these kids, the reason we have success was because of the parents that raised them, and she's a great example of that.
So you brought it up, Coach, with the, hey, somebody else likes this guy and wants to have him be on their roster as opposed to ours. You have a very veteran team. I'm assuming that was a big issue this offseason for your team because of all the guys you got coming back.
You know, it's exactly right. It's just part of the way the world is. Like, you know, I always tell my coaches, don't ever put yourself in a position that I have to make a decision, right? So, like, we don't do it, haven't done it. But, yeah, I was literally on a Zoom call with Gabe, and he mentioned a school that you know, a little bit south that mentioned that they would give him a certain number. And I'm like, listen, like, I get it. But he's like, Coach, I'm just asking. He said, but I'm not going anywhere. I know what you provided. I think that's the part. The true recruitment and retainment of our players is what we do every day in this building. I always tell our coaches, as an employee in this building, right, the one thing you can do every day that really helps all of us is be consistent and be great in communication, both giving and hearing, right? And our kids live that every day. I think I'm not oblivious to the fact that probably our 10 to 15 top players could have went other places for probably, you know, not just a little bit of money, a lot more money. But they know what we've built. They know the true reward. NIL is kind of going away, so now we're going to go with this revenue share. But I always say NIL, the I always stands for name, image, and likeness, but I always said NIL was instant money. That's what that I stands for. The NFL, that F stands for forever. If you get a chance to put yourself in a position, so when that NFL gives you an opportunity, you're in a position to make more money than you can make in a lifetime. That's when the true moment comes, and that's what a lot of our guys play for.
See, I'm from the South, Brett, and so it always stood for now it's legal to me. But because
I can't go there, but I appreciate the comment.
I said I did. I can. I yeah. Absolutely can go there. I can speak to it. I experienced it. It was fantastic. But you know, you talked about NFL a bunch of times, like fascinating, like Bill Belichick. Like how did you get tied up with Belichick? And I heard you spent a significant amount of time in a car with Belichick. So I can imagine that was fantastic.
Yeah, not just coach, but in that building, you know, so it was interesting. 2 years ago, the Cardinals took two of our guys. Well, there's a guy that's a GM there for the Cardinals named Monty Ossenfort, who literally is one of the better personnel minds. And, you know, obviously Coach Belichick, great with football, but I got to spend time with Nick Caserio. Now he's a GM of the Houston Texans, right? You got all these guys all around the NFL now that you built relationships with in the building. I was just at an event in Nashville where the agency that I work with basically brought in about 30, 40 personnel and coaches from all over the country to share ideas and to see the people that I had contact my 3 years in the league that are now in college football or around college football. It's just awesome. And I think that's part of my true growth. Like there's more things that I do now as a head coach at Illinois that I learned in my 3 years in the league that I spent the 12 years prior as a head coach in college football. It's just kind of the way the world works now. It's a world now where the things I learned under Coach Belichick, the things I learned under Joe Judge when I was with New York, the things I learned in the ownership of both the Patriots and the Giants, but also all my coaches, you know, that I was able to be a part of and see their success now is really 2 years of, or 3 years of just great learning.
So in a car with Belichick on the way to a pro day, what's the music?
Yeah, no music.
I didn't think so.
No, you know, as you know, guys get around, Coach Belichick is truly one of the most entertaining, intelligent, like just his way of seeing the world. Like it's just awesome to be a part of it. And then really the coaches he's around, Brian Flores, who's now the DC up in Minnesota, like, in my opinion, my time with him was one of the most engaging, most intelligent. He really taught me the NFL side of it. Brendan Daly, who's now with the Kansas City Chiefs, has won all those Super Bowls with the Chiefs. Like, I was around him on a daily basis. Dante Scannarchia, who's one of the best offensive line coaches, if not in NFL history, maybe the entire game of football, just an incredibly gifted guy. Ivan Fears, who was the running back coach there for all those years. Just so many talented people that told you that. But, yeah, the car ride was we actually took off out of Indy and ended up in Nashville. So I don't know how many hours that was, but it was a pretty entertaining for all the right reasons.
That's crazy. No music.
So did he call you when he took North Carolina job and was like, hey, Brett, how's this college thing work?
No, I don't think Coach is looking for any advice from any. Like, we have talked, you know, one of the most and David, you know where I'm going with this. Like, the one thing that was really intriguing me in the NFL was those mini camps where teams would get together and compete with one another. And so last year this past spring, I saw, you know, when I think it was Colorado and Syracuse were talking about getting together. And there was a moment where we thought some teams might do that either in the spring or this fall. That's when I reached out to him and said, hey, coach, you know, I know how you know it works. I know how a lot of times those moments are created by it, you know, organizations that think alike or act alike and know what the other one are expecting. Like, it's the surprises when things happen that aren't good. So I just reached out to him and said, hey, if we could do a little challenge with North Carolina and Illinois, either now or in the future, would be interesting. That was really the genesis of it. But, you know, we don't talk often. I have a tremendous respect for what he is and where he's at. He's got a couple coaches on his staff that are one guy I played with, Bobby Diaco, who was head coach at UConn, was at Notre Dame for a long time. And several coaches on his staff that I know well. Freddie Kitchens, a guy that I was with the Giants, he's OC. He's got a really good group of coaches. I think North Carolina is ready to come into college football, and they're probably in a better position than most people think.
Yeah. When you look at the new landscape of college football, and we'll get you out of here, you know, it's ever-changing. And this past year, the walk-on, you know, experience is getting taken away. You're a walk-on. Like, you're a former walk-on. Like, I think you have as much credibility to speak to that topic as anybody. Like, what do you think about, like, losing guys and just the changing landscape?
You know, on next year's roster, in my 5 years of being here, I think we put over 25, maybe 30 guys that were former walk-ons on scholarship now, right? And that's an element that, unfortunately, it's going to go away. But maybe it's not as bad as everybody thinks. So I was able to award about half a dozen guys that were non-scholarship players, full scholarships here, because the scholarship number went up a little bit. But also, I think in this world that we're living in, you know, think about it from an NFL roster standpoint. So I've got a number of probably 15 to 20, 25 guys that are really high-end value guys. They can make a lot of money, right? That are revenue share, NIL, however it plays out, are making a significant amount of money. But, you know, the world needs these bottom line level. They need league minimums, right? There's a league minimum in NFL for a reason. You need a lot of guys that have that ability to, you think, that can play. Maybe others don't, right? But I remember my second year at New England, we had the lowest paid defensive line in the NFL, 32 of 32. We were the bottom. At the end of the year, going into the first week of the playoffs, we were the most productive defensive line in the NFL. So it's a world where maybe you can have a player that many don't think can play or will play. And then if they create that value, they'll be rewarded in the future. So the walk-on world, you know, every team's going to be a little bit different too. Some teams may have very few, some may have more. But I think there are more scholarships than ever before. So maybe those former guys that wouldn't made scholarship players now will be rewarded, especially now with these portal worlds being so crazy.
So how settlement happens, what do you think is next on the list? Like, what would you like to see? Hey, this needs fixed. Is it the portal? If it is it one? When is it? What's next for you on that list?
You know, Brent, I'm being serious. There's never been a more enjoyable time in my career. This will be my 17th year as a head coach, 33rd year in college football as a coach. And there's never been a more exciting time, in my opinion, because of the portal world, because of revenue share. I think we just need to get everybody in the same window, right? Like, one of the things that really was intriguing to me in the NFL, right, was everybody had the same salary cap. So you can use it however you want to use it, but the true magic came when how people were using their salary structure, right? And I think the more that plays into college football, the people that understand it, get it, and know how to evaluate will be rewarded. The people that are trying to cash in on value, right? Because just because you pay somebody $1 million doesn't mean they're going to play like $1 million, right? Like there's going to be some accountability there. Some of these people are paying kids, you know, extreme numbers, you know, high school kids that have never played $2-3 million, right? Well, that's all fine and dandy until they come in and a kid you're paying $500,000 on your roster finds out that kid's making $2.5-3 million. You know, buckle up, buttercup. That don't work too well, right? So, like, I think, you know, one of the things that's really going to happen is accountability. This year, we still get a little bit of gray because teams could pay kids up till July 1st through their old, you know, NIL majors. But now the revenue share comes in. And if everybody's kind of in that 13 to 17 million, like, I know it's crazy to say that, but, you know, last year our salary was 5 million, but we were competing. We finished fifth in our league. And I know there were several, I think six teams that were over 20 or 25 million in our league. Like, that can't happen sustainably very long, right? You can get lightning in the bottle. We did some things, but now we're up in that 13, 14 million range. And as long as we're all in the same, you know, store, I said this a couple months ago, I said, I don't care if we all shopping in Louis Vuitton or if we're all shopping in Walmart, as long as we're all in the same store, right? Like if we can just all kind of shop with the same budget. And the big one though, for me, and you know, David, you said it in an eloquent way earlier, like there has to be accountability, right? Like, when people do things wrong, right, there has to be some type of assessment to whoever did it, right? Whether it be a coach, a GM, you know, there's some things going on right now. You know, I had a coach say it to me the other day, it's like that movie Wolf of Wall Street, right? Like when they were doing a bunch of things that were really popular and they looked pretty good and they got to buy a lot of nice things, but then when it crashed, they went to jail, right? Like there's some of that going on. Not a lot, but there's, you know, 5-10 teams in this world that we're operating right now that what they're doing just, it's not going to happen. And unfortunately, the people that will truly get the backlash of that will be these student athletes that are sometimes seniors in high school right now, these 2026 class. Like they're doing things and agreeing to things that in my opinion, they're just not going to happen. And that's the part where judgment day is going to be hard.
Well, and that's what people don't understand about all this too. Like nobody said these contracts were fair and they actually are giving out what they're saying, which is a big part of it. So, Coach, last thing, and I'll let you get out of here. Me and Brent were talking about just doing the Big Ten preview. Like, it feels like this league is as good as it's been. Like, because we used to look at Ohio State, and I remember the day, and listen, you remember this too. Like, we used to be like, if they play their C game, they'll win every game on their schedule but two at the most, or maybe one. Like, you got to experience a bowl game with South Carolina, who was a highly rated SEC team, and you did your thing. You took care of business. Like, this league, you've coached in the SEC, like this league and where you think it's going and where it's at.
Yeah, David, great point. I think college football has never had more parity. You know, even in recruiting right now, I don't care, but we've got a top 10 ranking. I've been a pretty good coach for a long time. I don't believe I've ever finished in the top 25, right? And what's happening now is we're not recruiting anybody different or doing anything different. We're just able to kind of be more balanced in the way we are competing against our opponents, no matter. You know, we've beaten kids in the SEC. We've beaten guys in the Big Ten, ACC, Big 12, right? Like, we're able to compete at a level right now at Illinois that we've never been able to do before. And for me as a head coach, even in my 17 years, but, you know, we have game two against Duke. We're going to play Duke. Duke is a really good football team, got a really good head coach. Manny's as special as it comes. They got a good quarterback they went out and got that I think is extremely talented. We came back game four. We're going to Indiana. We didn't play them last year, so they really weren't on my radar. I've watched every one of their games from a year ago. And, you know, Kurt Cignetti is an incredibly gifted coach. His players play really smart. He's able to acquire players through the portal. Like what I thought their quarterback last year, maybe there might have been one or two other quarterbacks, but I thought his quarterback was one of the best in the country. And I think he'll be a big hit in the NFL just because he does what they ask him to do. And my guess is this guy they're bringing in now will be the same thing. So, you know, Ohio State's very talented. Penn State, Michigan, USC are always going to have that name brand. It's hard to replace 50 years of football, right? But I think this world that we're living in now in college football is whatever. That's why I want to see it go to 16, because the more that we can get in, I don't think we want to go to 30 or 40 postseason play, but you get somewhere in that 16 wheelhouse and you're going to have teams that are two or three losses with four games remaining that if they went out, they could still make the playoffs. That's a pretty cool thing. That's good for all of college football.
Yeah, that's good for all of us. That's awesome. Well, we appreciate your time. And listen, get them dancing shoes on, big fella.
I appreciate it.
Ready to go dance.
Earplugs? Do you take earplugs? Do you need earplugs for that? Or
this is my first rodeo. I've been to a couple recitals, but I've never been to a four-day event. My wife did. I had some customized shoes for every game this year, and all of a sudden she said, hey, he's bringing over our customized shoes for the dance recital. I said, what? So I got some custom – my girl's dance studio is called AIM, Art in Motion, and so I got a live-ass pair of blue Nikes that got the – AIM logo and a little dance silhouette. So I don't know if I've ever had dancing shoes, but I got them now.
Hey, whatever they're into, I promise you as a parent, we'll be into. It doesn't really matter. We're going to get down with it. Thanks for your time, Coach.
Appreciate it, John. Have a great summer.